So yeah, anyway, that's Watchmen, and unfortunately, it's not so much in the movie, but it is in the comics that he's not just crazy; he's also probably not that good a person and crazy.
Oh yeah, you get that he's not necessarily the greatest person. No.
Right.
Oh, whatever. Right. I liked him, and I'm mad, and I want Dr. Manhattan to bring his particles back together and bring him back to life.
I'm expecting to see him in the show, but
he's dead, though.
He's not dead. They say he's on Mars.
Oh, Dr. Manhattan. I think you meant Russia.
Yeah. Oh, you said Dr. Manhattan.
I don't know if we'll see him, but I think we'll get more.
I want to see his big blue schlong. Let's get back into some less nerdy stuff. Wheel of Time. No. All right,
man,
you guys,
you're ready. Let's
you
do
guys
it.
Are ready? Welcome to Talk Around Riyadh, the Wheel of Time showcast. I am your host, Joe Perry, here with my co-host, Jen Isgra. How you doing, Jen?
Hello, Joe. I'm doing great.
Good. And Tom Kokoza, our other co-host. How are you, Tom?
I'm excited, as always. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, this was an unexpectedly news-filled episode, although we're not going to spend too much time on the news, but we did get some surprising news that we weren't expecting, which is always exciting. I almost feel like... Okay, we'll get to the news and I'll give you my opinion on it. So the first bit of news that we found out is that Daryl McCormack, he's an actor who's in Peaky Blinders, is reportedly going to be playing a part in the Wheel of Time first season. He's supposedly going to be in 3 episodes, and this was reported by Variety. We don't know who he's going to be yet, so there's a lot of speculation in the fan community about who he's going to be. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like this was purposely leaked because the fans were so upset that we didn't get more information on Real Time Wednesday.
Very possible.
That's a small theory of mine.
What if the next Wheel of Time Wednesday is just who he's playing?
That's what's
Wouldn't that be annoying?
That's what people were saying too. They were like, oh God, I hope, does that mean next Wheel of Time Wednesday we're just going to find out who he is, which is not going to be as exciting. But he's only in 3 episodes. So I don't think there's other big, well, we don't know who he's going to play. So I figure we'll quickly go through some of the characters that we think he could possibly play.
Right.
He's 26 years old. So that kind of cuts us down to a lot of characters.
Probably not Tom Marilyn.
He's not going to be Tom. He's not going to be Alias. He's not going to be more gays, at least I don't think, unless they go a different way.
Gareth Brynn. Yeah, or probably Gareth won't Brynn. Be Gareth Brynn.
Yeah.
No, probably not going to be Patton Fane. Probably
no.
not.
I mean, I don't know how old Fane is, but I think he's older. Not like
he's
old,
an adult.
Old.
Like, they treat him like he's Master 40s. Fane.
Right, because he's been coming to the Two Rivers for years.
Say, yeah.
Right.
Egwene says she remembers him coming since she was a little girl.
Yeah. So first up, there were 2 really main people that I saw a lot. So I guess we'll talk about them first. So the first one's Loghain.
Right.
So I think that's possible. He's the right age. Loghain's supposed to be, like, I think in his late 20s or close to 30, which he's close enough, I think. The question would be that Loghain isn't in that much of the books. But
he's in 2 pages.
He's in 2 pages. But Rafe did say, and I think there was... Somebody shared the trivia from IMDb, and there was a comment in there that Rafe made that he was looking to expand Loghain's part in the first season.
Yeah, I can see them doing a lot of, like, cutaways, like in the beginning where they're talking about there's a false dragon, like showing him at battle, like when they talk about he's been captured at whatever, like cutting away to him being captured by Aes Sedai and stuff like that. I can see them doing that because Loghain really, like, is not an important character at all, and then all of a sudden he's really, really important, and it's like an odd swing. So, like, seeding him in earlier as somebody who's, like, has an impact on the world wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing.
No, I agree with that. So Loghain is definitely a possibility. I think he's one of the more favorites that the fans are leaning towards. Mm-hmm. Second, I've seen a lot of is Aram, the Tinker.
Ugh.
I could see him playing Aram. I feel like he has a good look for Aram.
He does. He's very handsome. He's a handsome man, just like
and
Aram
he's like,
is.
I don't know the man at all. I've only seen photos of him recently.
Yeah.
But he's got like an annoyingly handsome face too. Like you just he looks like a guy who is just used to girls liking him.
Right.
Which is what Aram is. You just wanna So Aram is also, by the way, the worst, just in case anyone wasn't sure about it.
Wait, like, are there gonna be 3 episodes with Aram though? Because
that's why I'm
killing me inside.
Yes, that would be...
Maybe, what, 3 Tinker episodes? That's a lot of Tinker.
Yeah, that's what's making me think it's not him. But, I mean, at that time, there's multiple story arcs going on at the same time, right? You've got Rand, Matt, and Tom. You've got Nynaeve, Lan, and Moraine. And then you've got Perrin and Egwene. So I imagine during those episodes, they're going to be cutting back and forth. So you could see, like, his role... being small but still being expanded to like a couple of episodes just because they're with the Tinkers for a while. I don't know, three episodes. The only thing I can think of is he's an interesting character.
Right.
Egwene kind of, you know, gets a crush on him. But yes, he's the worst.
Yes, you know, it's a great character arc. As an actor, it'd be fun to play him. But oh man, is he the worst? He's the worst.
Yeah.
So I hope it's not him.
I hope they're cutting Aaron from
no
the
No one's playing him.
Yeah. We thought they were probably going to cut him from the story, yeah. But I could see them adding him to play off Egwene during those parts and maybe even make it a little bit more of a romance between them.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Other people mentioned the White Cloak. He could be one of the White Cloaks.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He could be Dane Bornhold, I guess. I don't think he would be Byer. And the only other named White Cloak that we meet, I think, in the first book is Dane.
Jeffrem, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeffrem. Yeah, you're right.
Well, he's got to be him. He's got to be somebody's dad. He's not old enough to play him.
Who's the one that's like right when Moraine and them come to save them? Who's the one that's like talking to Perrin right before that happens?
That's Byer. He's a psycho.
He's in a lot. He's a
terrible one.
He doesn't get it until...
towards the very end, like the second last book, I think.
Towers of Midnight, yeah. I think he gets killed at the beginning of that.
That's right. The only thing I could think of is like they bring Dane in sooner, but I don't know. I'm not buying White Cloak.
No. You know what I thought when I heard three episodes and people were talking about, like, oh, is Loghain going to be in? Maybe he's going to be playing all the Fades.
You think he's just going to be Murdrawl and just play off?
First of all, I could see them doing something like that. Like there's just one actor who plays all the Murdrawl because they all look alike or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was like, maybe he'll be that. You know, maybe like that's what his part is going to be. And like he's just.
I don't think they're going to make a real actor be a Murdrawl. Probably be like a stunt guy or something.
Well, eventually you get to be.
They talk. I mean, the Murdrawls do talk.
I know, but I can't see them covering up that handsome face with the beautiful eyes popping out of his headshot with no eyes at all.
Yeah, you stole. That's exactly what I was going to say. You can't cover up those big, beautiful blue eyes.
All right, everybody. I didn't know we were so excited. I guess really Aram is the right role for him.
So next up, I have Galad or Gawain. He's definitely. I could see him being Galad. I think he's definitely got the look for Galad or Galad.
I think it's Galad. It's always. Yeah. I think it's the three episode thing. Like that's a lot for everyone who's I was always seeing like the palace is like. The back half of one episode, the last like 20 minutes or something, mm-hmm. and then they'd be seated. If he's Gawain, I feel like that's going to change. People might have another freak out about what people look like in the show.
Yeah.
But I do think
they're twins, right?
No. Gawain's older.
They're not. Okay.
Yeah.
Gawain's, I think, is like Rand and Matt and Perrin's age.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. And Elaine is.
They're supposed to look alike.
Yes, they're supposed to have the same coloring, you know.
Right.
Galad is a good choice, except again, like, I just don't know.
Yeah, three episodes.
He's in one scene, isn't he?
Yes. I think he's got three lines in the book. He's got interactions, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
who knows? Again, they could give the royal family of Andor an extended part of the series. The great thing is that we really have no context about anything other than, you know, theorizing the first two episodes.
Yeah. So then I just want to move on to at least my last person that I put down. If you guys want to throw anybody else out there. Feel free. But my guess, this is what my second favorite guess is he's going to be Balzamon.
Oh.
Right?
Thinking.
That's the only other age-appropriate character that I could think of, because Ishmael's supposed to be a young,
he's
probably
so
in his
pretty,
mid-20s.
Though. Again, yeah, but, covering his eyes with caverns of flame. I don't know.
But they're not always on fire.
But when he... Well, yeah, then he gets his face all burned off. But when he would also be perfect, though, for when they switch to Moradin.
Yes.
Moradin's supposed to be a handsome young man.
Yeah, Moradin's supposed to be of an age with Rand, maybe a couple of years older. I think Ishmael's supposed to be middle-aged, and he's approaching his middle years.
No, they said, on a first description of him, he's a young man. It's supposed to be, I think, like in his mid to late 20s, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I always picture him too, Tom, as middle-aged, but if you go back and look at the description, it says like he's a handsome young man or something like that, or younger man.
All right. I will not debate the point.
So, okay, before we move on to the next thing, I want to get your final guesses. Tom, who do you think...
I think he's in Loghain.
Jen?
He's Loghain.
I'll say he's one of the White Cloaks. I could see them being in it for three episodes. I'm going to say he's one of the White Cloaks.
I think it's going to be Loghain as my top pick, but just to be different, I'll say Balzamon.
Oh, here's the thing. I have not seen the show Peaky Blinders, and I did not, between when I found out this news and right now, listen to or watch the show. I don't know what he sounds like. Maybe he's Loyal.
I know he's Irish.
Is he tall?
That's all I could say.
He doesn't have to be tall. Like, oh, he's gonna be CGI, or like he's not 8 feet tall. But if he's got a deep voice, he can do that
Maybe
part
he's
too, because
somebody from Shinar.
that's a character that could only be in three episodes.
The only really characters we meet in Shinar and Faldara are Agomar.
We
He's
do
really the
meet
main
Ingtar.
character. We do meet Ingtar, but they're not going to be in three episodes. They're there for like a chapter.
All right. All right, we'll stay with our original guesses.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
That's
good,
it.
because I want to move on to the next
Yeah,
bit
move
of
on.
news. So the next thing we got is that Narg from the Daily Trollic sniffed out a Twitter post from somebody with a link to an article from a Czech paper
That's
talking about,
Czechoslovakian.
yeah, a Czechoslovakian paper talking about filming that was done for the Wheel of Time in a church in the town in Czechoslovakia or near Prague. Well, I guess
Yeah.
Czechoslovakia doesn't
I
really
don't think
exist anymore.
Czechoslovakia,
exists
that's,
anymore.
yeah.
But
Czech Republic, Czech
the Czech
Republic.
Republic, sorry. So just I'm not going to read the article. It was clearly Google translated because I Google translated myself, and it's pretty funny when you read the Google translation of it because some of it doesn't make sense. But it was one day of filming, they mentioned, but the crew prepped for a month. They mentioned, and I quote, "They shaded the stained glass windows so that there was not so much light coming in. They placed grills on them and placed a wall some 13 meters high in front of the altar." So this was inside the church. They had perhaps 50 caravans, which I guess is the crew and all of their stuff. It said no actors spotted, but they were all young, which didn't make sense to me, but I think what they were trying to say is they didn't recognize any actors.
Yeah.
Right, but everybody they saw looked youngish.
Yeah, they also said that, and I quote, "The filmmakers will leave us the church door they made for the show," the mayor said. Now they were taking for the next shoot, but later they will be brought back," he added.
What?
So that was a little confusing as to why they took the door with them and then are going to bring it back. But somebody named Balefire on Reddit suggested that possibly took the door to shoot exterior shots on a green screen, maybe because the exterior, what they were going to just be using the interior of the church and the exterior was going to look like something different, which I thought was a good guess.
Okay. It also could literally just be the door is too big of a spoiler. After this season's out, they'll give the door to the guy.
Yeah, some people thought like a way gate,
Yeah, I was just thinking that, like a
which I thought was.
specific looking door.
Yeah, and then the inside was just like a random shot of the ways.
I was thinking it was Shadar Logoth when I first saw it. When I saw
Yes.
that picture with the light coming through, because it didn't look like they. I don't actually. Now we don't actually know if that picture is legit because it wasn't really part of the article. And we haven't had confirmation on where it came from.
So yeah, I want to mention that. Thanks, Jen, for pointing that out. So in Narg's post on Reddit, there was a picture. And we posted it on our Facebook page. There was a picture of an interior shot of a church, and I tried to check. That photo was not in the article, the original article, and it wasn't in the original Twitter post that he got the article from. So I'm not sure where that interior shot came from. I had questioned Narg on Instagram, and he did not reply. He just liked my comment. So I don't know what that means. I don't know where he got that photo from, or so I can't confirm. I will neither confirm nor deny the validity of that interior shot of the church.
So obviously we got the research team working on that
Yeah.
now. I have my own theories, but we'll wait till they get back to us. I'll say this, I also think it's Shadar
Me too.
Logoth. There's no other, unless it's something different, which is possible, whatever, there's no really other churchy like place that they go in the Eye of the World. It
Yeah.
doesn't, and the structure of stuff, it doesn't look like something that might be in Faldara or in Andor. So it does look like very old worldy, very kind of possibly run down.
Right.
So this could be where they camp or where they meet
Mortis.
Morneth. Yeah, which is
Yeah.
what I'm thinking more, especially if they're saying everyone looked young, you know,
Yeah.
then they didn't see
Yeah.
Rosamund Pike.
I
Yeah.
agree.
She
I think it's
looks young.
Shadow
No, but they
Logoth
didn't
there. If they
recognize
don't know who she
anybody,
is,
so.
well, I don't know if I would recognize her. She's famous, but not
I
like.
recognize her. I like
Yeah.
Doom.
That's right. She was in that.
She's in Doom.
Yeah, some other things that people thought were Caemlyn Palace, but again, I agree with you, Tom. It looks
Yeah.
too run down to be
Yeah.
that. Other people said the White Tower, but they don't go to the, I
There's
mean,
no White Tower.
yeah, it's
Well.
possible they show a White Tower scene, but yeah, I don't think so. The other somebody I saw today something that somebody's comment that I thought was really good is they said it could possibly be from one of the dream sequences.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Right?
Oh,
I
very
said,
nice.
yeah, and I said, "Oh, did we see any fireplaces with tormented faces on it?" But
Well, that's We'll get that done in post.
Yeah, so that could be it. Now, and again, the whole thing with the door, somebody said it could be a way gate in the ways, which is also a possibility. If they took the door with them, that could be the very distinct look of the way gate.
If they covered up the window so no light got in, it could have been like the basement where they first go in. You know, if they're trying to keep it dark, maybe that was that scene. Like the bait's supposed to be underneath one of the buildings.
That's right.
Possible. I feel like that's too explicit a structure for it to say like, all right, we're going to turn this into the basement of a building. Like, you don't need to like find a location, I feel, for that.
They could have done that on like a set.
Right. They didn't need to look like that. To me, maybe, we'll find out and maybe I'll disagree when I see it live. Yeah. But
I want to go on to one final quick thing, last quick bit of news before we go on to the main story of our episode. So Rafe Judkins did tweet a photo of the writer's room and made a comment about writing for season 2.
Yes.
Which is super exciting, and everyone was very excited about this. He did confirm, though, that there was no green light for season 2 from Amazon. They're just starting to write season 2.
Okay. I did not catch that, so that's good, I guess, to know.
He did. He replied to his own tweet saying that. So it's still exciting, though.
It's usually exciting.
Yeah, of course.
They must be happy with what they're doing now, though, if they think they even have a chance of doing season 2.
Yes.
So I think that's a positive sign no matter what.
I think exactly. I think it's a sign of confidence and
encouraged. That's the word I was looking for. They must be encouraged by what they've been seeing.
Just have the thesaurus handy. It also, we only had confirmation that they had 2 scripts, right? You know, I mean, obviously they're filming whatever you anticipate, but like sometimes, you know, people go in and start filming and nothing, everything's done yet. So the fact that they are done enough with season 1, think that that's completely written, polished, whatever, that they feel like they can move on to season 2 is just like a kind of, you know, unspoken confirmation of the strength they feel in their production. Very, very excited about that.
Oh, just I forgot to mention the name of the church. So that the church that they were filming at is the Church of St. Wenceslas.
Oh, good King Wenceslas.
Oh, you know good King Wenceslas?
Good King Wenceslas went to town on the Feast of Stephen. Everyone knows that song.
I don't think that was Wenceslas.
Definitely, good King Wenceslas.
Yeah, it definitely was. He walked in the snow. Fire was in his footprints, and he led the whatever.
Oh, I don't know that part.
Oh, wow. So there you go. Maybe that'd be one of Tom's songs that he sings in the show, if Tom's in it.
As you all heard, hopefully he has a better voice than I do.
Oh, you're pretty good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
If Tom's not in it, we do our own cut of the show and insert our Tom into the show.
I think everyone would love that.
Yes.
I'll tell you that if that's what we do.
And release it.
The missus will be unhappy, but I will grow the mustaches.
Yes, and dye everything white.
Well, just practice, I don't know if I'll go that far.
You need to
start
tumble,
practicing
Tom.
Now.
You need to learn how to tumble and do handstands and juggle and all that stuff.
I can do 1.5 of those things right now.
All right.
Good. I'll let you guys figure out which ones those are.
I think pretty sure you can juggle a bit.
Yes, that's true.
I've seen you. I remember when I think your dad got you juggling balls, didn't he, or something for Christmas?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I had to learn how to use them.
All right, so let's move on to our main story for this episode. So on this episode, we are going to be talking about Moraine, one of the greatest characters in this series, one of the most important characters. So we're going to kind of get into her story, a little bit of her background, and just hit on a few key things from Eye of the World that we wanted to talk about. So as usual, we will start this off with me reading from the Eye of the World, a description of Moraine when we first meet her. So this is from Chapter 2 of Eye of the World, Strangers. And this is from Moraine's perspective. At first, he thought she was as young as Nynaeve, but the longer he looked, the more he thought she was older than that. There was a maturity about her large, dark eyes, a hint of knowing that no one could have gotten young. For an instant, he thought those eyes were deep pools about to swallow him up. She held herself with the grace and air of command that made him feel awkward and stumble-footed. She was barely tall enough to come up to his chest, but her presence was such that her height seemed the proper one, and he felt ungainly in his tallness. The wide hood of her cloak framed her face and dark hair hanging in soft ringlets. Her cloak was sky blue velvet with thick silver embroidery, leaves and vines and flowers all along the edges. Her dress gleamed faintly as she moved, a darker blue than the cloak, and slashed with cream. A necklace of heavy gold links hung around her neck, while another gold chain, delicate and fastened in her hair, supported a small, sparkling blue stone in the middle of her forehead. A wide belt of woven gold encircled her waist. On the second finger of her left hand was a gold ring in the shape of a serpent biting its own tail.
Rand is very observant.
Yes, he is. He would make a good writer.
When they say the dress is slashed, a lot of people have dresses that are slashed with another color. How do you guys picture that? Like in the skirt? Like it's just like stripes?
That's a Kyrian and nobility thing. And when we get to Kyrian, when you first go there, they talk about all the nobles and the slashes. And I think like the more slashes you have, right, the higher rank you are.
Yeah, the more and the higher up they go on your outfit, right? Yeah.
I think it's your chest. I don't think it's like the actual skirts part. I think it's more
like bars on your chest, kind of?
Yeah.
But it's like literally like stripes from what I've seen.
Diagonal, right?
Yeah, diagonal stripes. But I've seen like inspirations, like real life inspirations for that, what they're trying to do. And it literally is like, here's a, you know, the main body of the dress is blue and it's slashed with cream. Like it's just cream strips of fabric that go from the chest down or from the waist down or whatever the case may be. So it's not like it's ripped open and like underneath that, because they're diagonal. I think that's what the slashing.
Oh, all right. That's what I thought. I thought it was like not ripped, but like underneath was a different color.
Yeah,
this is important.
Yeah, this. Well, so Jordan does a great first description of like the ageless look. Mm-hmm. You know, in this, he talks about how she was young, but he thought she was older than that, and the maturity about her face. So that's the ageless face we're getting right there, which is the first description we get of it. So that's a really good description that he gives there, too.
Yeah.
Her grace with an air of command, which is like patented Moraine.
Right. And he doesn't just come out and say that she's very attractive, but like the fact that like Rand loses himself in the pools of her eyes, like it's just a good way of like going, oh, and by the way, like she is somebody who would be conventionally attractive as well. It's funny because that's how she's described, and that's a pretty consistent description. I never picture her with ringlets.
Neither do I.
Even like on the cover, she's got ringlets too. I just like that seems like such like a little girl hair description to me that I just can't wrap it with everything else about Moraine.
It's probably just her naturally curly hair.
What is she like? What's her face from Charlie Brown? Violet? Is it Violet? I don't know.
Frida. Yes.
Frida.
Does Frida have the naturally curly hair?
Frida. Violet wears like the purple. She's like just anyway. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, so you're right. I never pictured her either. And for some reason, I always pictured her with lighter hair, I don't know. So
I'm off on a tangent now, but Lucy is definitely red, Aes Sedai. But I just had to let that thought be into the podcast. Go ahead.
I have to tell you, basically, that's how I picture Elena, just older. Yeah, just exactly that look.
We could do a Peanuts Wheel of Time crossover episode. we'll do that one.
Oh my god.
So do you think Rosamund Pike's gonna wear a wig?
No, I think she's gonna look like Rosamund Pike.
What about dyeing her hair maybe?
No, I don't think they need to do any of that stuff. Yeah. She would do it. I think she's done that for roles in the past, but it doesn't matter. It's not necessary.
Yeah, she's definitely doesn't have the height. She's tall. I think Rosamund Pike's like 5'6" or something like that. So
Right. And Moraine's more
5'2", I think they list her at in the companion.
Jen's like, that's tall.
That's super tall.
Yeah.
I don't think that matters, though, really, either. Like,
it doesn't. I was just, you know, throwing it out there.
The height thing is more just like a Carrie-Anne thing. Like, they're all supposed to be
shorter
people.
Yeah. And I think they try to point out, like, her diminutive stature, but her presence is very large.
Right.
And her air about her. So just some background on Moraine. Her name's Moraine Damodred, right? She was born in 956, which means she's about 42 at the beginning of the series. She's the daughter of Dalrison Damodred, nephew to King Laemon, who was famous for cutting down Avendor Aldera. Did I say that right?
I think you may have.
The piece of the tree that was given to them by the Aiel.
Starting the Aiel War.
Yes. She's also the youngest half-sister of Tarangel Damodred, who is the father of Elaine Gowan and Galad. So she's technically their aunt.
Uh-huh.
She went to the White Tower at the age of 16. She was really, truly a wilder, but it was kept secret. She started channeling early on and she kind of hit it, and then when the Aes Sedai advisor to King Laemon came back, she told that Aes Sedai, and the Aes Sedai never shared it with anybody, so nobody really knows that she's technically a wilder, I don't think.
Right. Okay. That explains.
Yeah. She was raised to accept it in 3 years, and then Aes Sedai in 3 more.
Which is one of the fastest ever
Yes. And her and
Right.
so her and Swan, right? She's very close with Swan. Her and Swan both arrived at the White Tower on the exact same day, and they both were raised to Aes Sedai on the exact same day. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. It's almost like fate, right?
They were also very, I mean, they were pillow friends. We want to get into all of that, but they're very close.
Yes, they were pillow friends.
It's a
They
different time.
also,
It's college.
yeah, it's college, you
They were just
experiment.
experimenting.
Well, you're lonely, right? You're in a basically an environment with just women.
Right, through
Right.
your puberty years, like that's one of the explanations for the frequency of it. But then you spend the rest of your life also usually with just women.
That's true, and you're most of the Aes Sedai don't really interact that way with men,
Yeah.
except for the greens,
Except the green.
suppose.
Right.
So she and Swan were also with. So this is really what kicks off the whole story, is that her and Swan were attending the Amyrlin Tamra at the time, and with the keeper Guitar Amorosa, who famously had the foretelling that the dragon was reborn,
They were
and then she
witness to
died.
it.
Yeah, they witnessed it. They were there for it.
They were
So,
not Aes Sedai, though, at that point, right?
No, they were accepted.
Accepted.
yeah, yes. They were raised shortly after, though.
Right. In part, if you've read New Spring, and again, remember everybody, this is a spoiler podcast, right? So if you read New Spring, in part, the Amyrlin raises them because they're the only two people that you really trust to start investigating this
Well, they're
because.
also the only other two people who know about this. So there's only
Right.
three people who know about this foretelling, because Katara dies,
Right.
and then eventually Tamra's
Also,
dies,
right.
who gets killed by the Black Aja, we find out later on.
Right.
So Swan and Moraine then are the only two left who know about it, and they kind of make it their life's work to try to find the dragon and ensure that he makes it to the last battle. The only other bit of background that I made note of is that she left the tower. When so after King Laemon was killed at the end of the Aiel War, she left the tower because the sitters in the hall were starting to talk about possibly putting her on the Sun Throne, and she wanted no part of that. She didn't really like her family at all. So like the whole Damodred family, except for her father, was kind of nefarious,
Right.
and she doesn't even really use her last name, and she kind of distanced herself from the family because of that.
Yeah, and she didn't want to be, if she was placed on the throne, she felt like she would be a puppet and she wouldn't be able to do what, her life's work was, which is find the dragon reborn
Yes.
and make sure he is alive and ready to fight the last battle in whatever way she feels is necessary to do so. It's a really interesting character, and I love that you know none of that in the first book.
Yeah.
Really.
All of this is from A New Spring, though some of it is like you know that she's the half sister Tarringale. You find that out, I think, later on in the series.
They don't directly say, but they give you the information to find out that she's the aunt of
Galad
Gowen
Gowen
and
and
yeah,
Elaine. Yeah, and I think
Elaine.
it's that whole sequence, right, where Rand is worried that he's related to Elaine.
Right.
It's when he meets with Caroline Damodred, who is Moraine's cousin, who looks
Right.
very much like her.
Right.
Rand is worried that he's related to Elaine because of the whole, love going on between them. But he meets Caroline, and she talks about the whole family line and everything like that. And I think that's where you clear up all of that.
Right. It's just a confusing bit. I honestly think that that bit was put in because fans were like, wait a second, are you trying to tell me that they're related? And they're like, no, by marriage and like through weird things, right?
Well, is that also where we find out more information about Tigraine,
You
Rand's
know,
mother?
you find out more about why Tigraine left there, but you already know that she wasn't pregnant before she left. And I think that was what Rand was worried about. Just, I
Oh, that
really want to make
Tarringale was
sure
his father.
that Tarringale's not my dad.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, which wouldn't make any sense. Why would he look like an eel then? But
Yeah.
you just want to make sure. He had a lot of stuff going on starting in book five.
Yeah.
He didn't need that stressor as well. So,
And Moraine's one of the most powerful Aes Sedai at the time
yes.
of the beginning of Eye of the World. I think they mentioned that there's only like three or four other Aes Sedai who are as strong or stronger than her.
Right.
One of them being Elaida, Cad Swain, who's in retirement, Swan, and Lelaine. And then they mentioned, I think, Romanda is about the same level of strength as her. But yeah, I mean, she's like one of the most powerful at the time. And then, like, all hell breaks loose and you start meeting all these people who are more powerful than her. But.
Right. And you find out that's because Aes Sedai are a very enclosed ecosystem of channelers, if you will. And because they're not really out in the world breeding, they're limiting themselves and their potential. Whereas if you're going to other places where either channeling is more free or it's hidden or just out in the world where the Aes Sedai don't go anymore, that's where you find like these super powerful channelers still exist. People are like, oh, it's everywhere they go, there's a super, like, no, that's because the Aes Sedai have been through their own methods, accidentally culling the power out of civilized society and
Yeah,
rampant.
they're awful recruiters, and there's theories around there that this is the Black Aja's doing, that the Black Aja has been kind of manipulating the tower behind the scenes to kind of reduce the amount of channelers that they're bringing in,
Oh, that makes
possibly.
sense.
Yeah, it
Makes
could
sense.
be. Yeah, it could be a Black Aja plot, which I think is makes logical sense. I mean, Shalmael's running the Black Aja at the beginning of the series, and it's a very good strategy.
Yeah.
Although it does limit then the amount of recruiting that Black Aja could do. If they're not bringing in people at all, it's hard to recruit more people to the Black.
Anybody I feel who's a dark friend, they never think the long game. You know, they really don't.
Lanfear does. She's got a really long game.
Lanfear does, Ishmael does, but even a lot of the other Forsaken don't,
Yeah.
right? Lanfear, at least, and Ishmael, the only two who really understand what the Dark One is gonna do. Ishmael wants it, and Lanfear's like, "Well, I'll just kill him, and I'll become the Dark One, I guess, or whatever. I don't know." Even that, like, it's just like Lanfear's plan is kind of like those elves that steal socks in South Park. Like the whole middle part about how you do that's not really planned out. But whatever.
Some of her other talents. So she's pretty damn good at healing
Yes.
for someone in the blue. I almost feel like that's just a plot device that's necessary because she's the only Aes Sedai in the beginning that they're with, and somebody needs to be able
Yeah.
to heal them.
Do you think he just kind of gave her random powers and then fleshed it out more in the next books? Like, oh, well, like every Aes Sedai could heal, you
But they
know, like
can't.
in the, no,
Some
I
of them,
know,
like,
but I'm
all. Yeah.
like in his head, he was like, all right, well, this is a power that they have. And then once he started
Oh.
fleshing out other Aes Sedai and other powers, like other people could heal, some couldn't, or whatever it was. Like in the first book, he just kind of gave her whatever powers.
I think he knew that not all the Aes Sedai were going to be good at healing. I think it was necessary for the story that she be fairly good at healing because she's the only one there.
Right.
Yeah, I do think, though, Jen, to your point, and it was one thing I wanted to bring up. Just, I know we've been talking about it for like 15 minutes, 20 minutes now, but we are really talking about Moraine in the context of like how she's in the eye of the world. There probably will be follow-up episodes with Moraine and doing more about her. We're not going to be talking about 4 hours of her right now, but in the eye of the world, she does things with the one power that nobody else does ever. And there.
She is one of the most powerful Aes Sedai,
She
though, at the
is, but
time, so.
like, I do think that Jen has a legitimate point that, like, I don't know if Jordan really had everything completely plotted out. Like, what she
Oh,
does when they
no.
leave Berlin and she grows
Yeah.
to a giant height, like, how does she step over the wall if that's an illusion? Like, it doesn't really make sense. So, like, that I feel is a little bit much. There were fine tunings that happened afterwards, but one of the things that I like about how he structures the world of the story is that anything that's a plot convenience is written off as Taviren. Like she had it was the will of the pattern.
Tavira?
She had to be good at healing because that is what the pattern needed for
Well,
them to survive their early journeys.
we'll do a whole nother episode on Tavira, but that's just the greatest plot
I'm gonna hang.
hammer of all
It's
time.
like we'll hang a lampshade on it and then paint the lampshade and then everybody talk about how cool the lampshade is so that no one ignores the fact that I can just do whatever I want.
Yeah. So we'll do an episode on Tavira
Yeah.
now. So one other thing, she does have an Angreal that we know of. It's the ivory carving of a lady in flowing robes, which does help her in the first book do a lot of things that are, beyond her normal capabilities. Just off the top of my head, I'm thinking of when they leave Barallon and they encounter the Trollocs, and she basically creates an earthquake
Yeah.
Right.
that knocks down like hundreds of Trollocs and Murdral, and not hundreds of Murdral, but I think there's four Murdral and like four fists of Trollocs.
And doesn't she say later, like, that's not even what she's good at?
Yeah,
Like,
she's
fire.
not.
I was not even that good
Yes.
at fire and earth, but.
And Earth, yeah, she does exactly. Because I think she also does some fire. She starts blasting things up with fire.
She does throw fireballs like nobody's business, which is.
Yeah, and she does. She mentions that she's
Well,
weak.
we
She's not
definitely
that
know there's going to
strong
be
enough.
fireballs in the show because we heard that line that Matt said in the table
Oh, there
read
you
I
go.
know. I
About her
can't wait to.
throwing a fireball. So
I can't wait
we'll
to
get at
see
least
some.
one fireball.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
She introduces us to the washing away of exhaustion, Which all the which seems like every Aes Sedai can do. It's a pretty common trick, I think, that a lot of Aes Sedai do. I don't think it's used in this book, but she is skilled at eavesdropping.
No, it's at the end, very end.
Is it at the end?
Okay. Literally the last page.
Oh.
She's using the crystal. She uses the crystal that's on her forehead as a focal point to eavesdrop on Rand and Egwene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So speaking of focal points, I know we want to hit this point, and it was pet peeve of at least mine and you, Tom. So Moraine carries a staff in the Eye of the World, or at least most of the Eye of the World.
Right.
She mentions multiple times that items don't have power. It's a focal point. The staff gets destroyed when they're escaping the ways.
Right.
And then it's never seen again, and she never uses anything else like it again.
Right.
Why did Robert Jordan give her a staff?
It's annoying and stupid, but it's directly because she's supposed to be a stand-in for, like, a Gandalf and a Merlin and all those things that are... And they have staffs, so it's a wizard. She's a wizard. She needs a staff. And
it's just for the fantasy trope somebody having a staff
and
destroying of the... Go ahead.
Sorry, no, go ahead. You first.
No, maybe the destroying of the staff is him destroying everything you thought you knew about magic users in fantasy novels. Like, we don't need this staff. This magic is going to be different.
Oh, Jen, I like that. that's better than I was going to say anyway, so I'm going to go first. But yeah, I think I do think that there was and we talked about this a little bit in one of our earlier podcasts, but like that the beginning of the book is supposed to be very evocative of the beginning of the Lord of the Rings series. And
yes.
She's got to, like, you got to be like, oh, okay, here's our Merlin, here's our Gandalf figure. She's got the staff. She tells tales of, you know, what happened ages ago and all the rest of that stuff. So I think that's definitely that desire. And I think you nailed it right there. Like, that's done now. Now we're going to be our own story. We're going to be doing different things.
Do you think she'll have a staff in the TV show?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's necessary, but they might want to do the same thing. I mean, there is a mythic element to it. And I do think that having that, I really hope they, like, there's a lot of myths drawn upon, obviously, for the inspiration for these characters, but the Arthurian myth is by far the strongest, I feel, or the most easily picked up upon. So I hope they kind of hit that stuff, because I think that plays, and I think that will have a lot of, you know, like, people get things without having to have them explained to them, because the Arthur myth is so omnipresent in the entertainment, right?
Yeah, Tom just pointed out to me before this that...
You didn't have to say that. But
I'm going to say it, because I've missed all of these Arthurian references. Amarlin is Merlin.
I cannot believe you didn't know that Amarlin is Merlin. It's a Merlin. Yeah.
I didn't know it either.
Oh,
well, I thought of Tom Merlin. I thought
yes,
Merlin
also,
Merlin.
Right? So there's a bunch of, like, the Merlin character.
Gawain and Galad. Galad, I knew. That was obviously clear.
Did you get Lan as Lancelot?
Yeah, kind of.
He's the best knight.
Lan Mandragon?
Right. No. Wow. He is definitely.
He's just a man. He's a man dragon.
He is a man dragon. You see the vein on his
Lan
arm?
Man dragon. Yeah.
Oh, and the picture of him working out.
Dude.
The one that I never got, and I wasn't really embarrassed that I didn't, was Egwene Alvear as Guinevere. Yeah. That was great. That was great that he put that in there. I totally didn't get it. It was.
Well,
I wasn't really looking for any of these things, I guess. I don't know.
No.
And
Morgaze I got too. Morgan Le Fay, Morgaine, but even though she's nothing like that character, but
just she's beautiful. That's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, very beautiful.
Moraine also has I think, kind of inspired by Morgan Le Fay. There's a thing there too, but again, I think it's just more in the look and the general sense of magic and the general sense of, you know, being attached to your Randall Thor, King Arthur figure. Although in the first few books, they do a lot of, she's very mysterious and you don't know what her motives actually are. And she does a lot of implicit threats. And like, they even, like, in the second book, I think, are like, maybe Moraine's actually a dark friend. Like, even though that makes no sense, but like, they try and play that up with you. And I think that's a lot of where the Morgan Le Fay vibe comes from.
It's funny too, because Morgan Le Fay, I believe, tries to seduce Lancelot.
Right.
At one point, to break him up with Guinevere or something like that. I think there's some sort of storyline in there. It's funny because Morgaine and Lan, Morgan Le Fay and Lancelot. You're right. So that's a great point, though. She is very mysterious character. Even throughout the entire series, you don't get that many point of views from Moraine. Even like, you know, later on in the series, you're not getting that many point of views. So
points of
her
view.
Motives, points of view.
Sorry.
Point of so, view.
Point of view.
So you never really, you don't always get like insight into her motives and her plans.
No.
In the Great Hunt you do, though. She's talking to Swan.
Yes, you do get them. I'm not saying you don't get them, but you just don't get a lot of them. As much of a big character, as important character she is, you just don't get as many points of view from her.
And again, I think that's Jordan trying to give you the same doubt that Rand has. Like, what does she want from me? What is she trying to do? Why does she keep driving me? Why does she not give me any piece of information? I think that they do a very good job of making... And this is the last point that I really wanted... Well, there's two things. But this is the last one I really wanted to kind of hit, is that they do a great job of balancing the fact that she is one of the key pieces of exposition and world building, like giving you these huge chunks of valuable information. And then just when you want to find out more, she completely shuts down and gives you nothing. So there's still like a sense of mystery about her. You can understand why people feel like, I can't trust her, she never tells me anything, whatever. But she gives you all this great stuff about the One Power, about the world at large, like all these things. I think it's terrific. And I didn't know or didn't remember about the Wilder thing with her, but that plays so well with what she does in the first book and how she like takes the time to reach out to these girls and train them and like try and make sure that they're okay, even though they may be really a hindrance to her because there's a some sort of kinship there. I like that.
Oh, I think she totally thinks that they're part, and she says it like I think to Lan or whatever, that they're part of this. That's why she's like, this is the pattern. She's very like a devout follower of the pattern.
Yes.
And the, you know, the wheel weaves as the wheel wills, as she would say. And you know what? I realize she's not the first person who says that in the series. I think it's Master Luhan or one of the Two Rivers men says it first.
Hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, that's her philosophy, I think, in a nutshell. And I think she realizes that these other people are involved. She obviously senses that Egwene and Nynaeve can channel and are going to be very strong in the power. And she's like, these people got it. This is no coincidence that they were here with these three boys and they got to come to the tower. We can't afford to let them get away. And yes, you also hit the nail on the head where her biggest failing is her lack of communication.
Right.
And giving information. There's so many issues that happen in the series just because she doesn't communicate, you know, her plans or information that's pretty important. And it leads to a lot of distrust between her and Rand and Matt and Perrin.
Yeah.
And Nynaeve, who, you know, is like her nemesis for a while.
Yeah.
It does. And, you know, you understand her background. You understand that basically she's been, like, with one other person, like, more or less alone in the world for the last, like, 15, 20 years, you know, trying this thing. There's nobody she trusts, etc. And she gives you a couple of times in the Eye of the World about, like, well, what if I gave you this information? What would you do? Like, you wouldn't do anything. This is what you need to know to just move on. And everything else is just going to, like, freeze you with, you know, indecision or whatever. But it is. And we've talked about this before as well, but like really one of the key themes of the entire series is that communication between people, especially between men and women, but just between people, is essential for things to succeed. And when communication doesn't happen, things fail.
Communication breakdown, like Led Zeppelin said. The one other thing that I had here is a note is that she's highly skilled at Dice Damar, the game of houses. Growing up in the Kyrianan court, obviously she learned a lot from her family and, you know, even more so when she's becoming an Aes Sedai. Do you think they'll change the name of Game of Houses just because it sounds too much like Game of Thrones?
Yeah, but I don't know what they'll change it to. They may not just call it Dice Damar and let you figure out what it is.
Don't they also call it the Great Game? Do they also mention to it as the Great Game?
Maybe.
I feel like they do.
I have to get the research
don't
team
quote
on,
me
that.
On that. Could probably Google that one.
Yeah, well, again, I think that plays into the fact that she's very cagey about giving out information. She's very cagey about how she does. Everywhere she goes that she thinks she may need to go back to, she's got fake identities. She's got, like, safe houses set up. She's very good at planning for all this stuff. Maybe about a month or so ago, I saw, like, a thing on Twitter, like, on, you know, Twitter of Time, where someone asked a question, like, if you had to get rid of one Ajah, which one do you feel is the mm-hmm. one you can get rid of? And like people are like, oh, the gray or the white or whatever. And honestly, I think it's the blue. The blue has nothing. Like everyone else has a purpose. Their purpose is causes. And like I feel like you can wrap that up in the gray Ajah very easily. And I feel like really there's two blue Ajah who have a purpose. Everyone else is like pretty much useless. Like not as a character with their own individual drives, but like no other cause makes a difference at all. Right? It's just Swan and Moiraine. And it's,
yeah, you never hear about other causes that the blue Ajah are involved
in. There's
nobody
like helping
I don't think you
hunger
do,
or homelessness. There's no blue Ajah and Carrion trying to like stop the fact that nobody has food. They're not doing that. And again, I feel like you could easily wrap it up in the gray. But Moiraine is really the ideal. Hey, Catherine's blue too. And I guess
She's green.
No, she's green. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Once she leaves the tower back when she becomes Aes Sedai shortly after that, she almost never goes back to the tower.
Right.
She spends almost all of her time outside of the tower, again, hunting for the Dragon Reborn, and to the point where she's almost like a legend because, you know, the other Aes Sedai don't really see her much. And there's some Aes Sedai who almost never leave the tower.
Right. I feel like...
Which is kind of crazy.
It is. I feel like I would be that kind of Aes Sedai, though.
You just sit in the...
Just sit in your tower.
Read.
Sit in the tower and read and look at all those books and study all the different Ungreal and Terra Ungreal. And...
Yeah, I feel like people are like, oh, I would like to be a green. I would be a blue. Or like, maybe I'd be a gray, but I'd probably be a brown.
Yeah. I think I would probably be a white.
Yes, I think you would be a white Aja.
What is white?
That's
the logic.
The logic. And they're also like philosophers. They're like, it's not just like, it's logic and philosophy. But like, I feel like that's more your, that is more your strength. That would be
like
I thought
hard
tier.
About it. I was like, oh yeah, I'd love to think I'd be like a green or.
Yeah, everybody wants
I'm
to
like,
be green. But...
No, I'm a brown. Like, let's be real.
The people in the military, those are the greens.
Yeah, I'm not a green.
And they wear the green.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone got any last thoughts on Moiraine? Maybe more towards the TV show. You think they're going to keep her pretty much like she is in the books, same character style, or you think they might change her in any way?
Yeah, I think she's a good character. Even from just the one line we heard her read, you know, we really said before that we think she brought Moiraine to life even in that one line. I think they'll pretty much keep her the same, you know, with the non-communication. I think that would be good for the TV show as well.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think they really need to touch her that much. She's an amazing character in the series, and there's not really much more that needs to be done with it or changed. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, they've said that she's going to be like more of a focal point, but I think she's going to do that really by star power alone. And, you know, like camera choices and whatnot. They don't need to give her more lines or give people less. She's going to be impressive enough of a character that she's going to draw your attention to her. Yeah, I think cosmetically they might not force it to make her look like that. I don't know if there'll be as much viney embroidery on her clothes.
Flashes, though?
Flashes will be there. I think that's kind of cool, but I feel like some of the stuff works well in when you read it, but isn't going to look that good. Although, who knows? I'm not...
A costume designer.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, I'm really not educated on costume design either. So this show has the potential to like kind of really blow things out of the water because costuming and fashion is such a key element to the scripters and in the books. Yeah. So they could do something.
Jordan goes into a lot of detail about the costumes, so there's plenty to pull from. They don't.
We'll do a whole episode on that one day.
Oh, God, I dread that episode.
Not about the, but about the style, not about the costume. Anyway,
all right.
I guess you know, and this one too. I'll ask to our audience. You guys feel free to answer back. Is Moiraine the best character or the greatest character? That's your options.
What's
so just
the
let
difference?
Us know. Oh well, that's up to you to tell me.
I don't think either.
You want me to answer that now, or you want
no,
to
I don't
want to
I wanna hear. We can answer it ourselves, you know, whenever we do Moiraine Part 2. When
do
we
you
start
mean
talking about...
in the series or just in the entire
no,
world?
Just in general. I do think that she's a terrific character, but I think that she's very cool. I think she's. I think that they're going to do whatever they can to make her even cooler on the show. There's a reason that that's the person that they got a name for.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree. You know? So thanks, everyone, for listening. This was our Moiraine episode. We had a lot of news to talk about, too, so that was great and exciting. You can follow us on Twitter at Aran Talk. You can follow us on Instagram, talk_Aran_Riyadh. You can follow us on Facebook. Check us out on there. We're picking up a little steam there, so keep that coming, everybody. Thanks, everyone, for listening again, and you'll hear us next time.